It's time for overtime.
And I know just the guy to talk to.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Tell me more, tell me more.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's hour number two on a Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. We were on the air at 10, off the air at noon, making way for those Twins to put boot to butt on the Guardians as they're looking for a sweep of Cleveland. That matchup is on the way, coming up at noon, pregame, 12:40, the start time this afternoon. Guardians and Twins from Target Field. If the Twins win today, which means the Guardians lose today, they would have an identical record tied for second place in the AL Central. So certainly a ton to play for. Twins also have a favorable schedule the rest of the way into the All-Star break. Three-game series at home against the LA Angels Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Listen to all the games right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Dustin Baker, Stone Baker in studio. Hour number two on the way. Vikings chatter. What do fans want to happen at the quarterback position? Quarterback competition, latest breakout stars debate, and also five Minnesota Vikings most primed to make a leap. And we can talk about, what does a leap mean? Does that mean a good player goes to a great player? Does that mean a UDFA makes the roster? I'll let Dustin Baker hash out the details for you, but it cannot be a bona fide star. Justin Jefferson cannot make any more of a leap, I hope not, than he does already in the Minnesota Vikings circles. We'll talk NFC North preseason and camp battles to watch and more as we move forward on Vikings Thursday. Major League Baseball scorecard look here. Chicago Cubbies baseball a winner yesterday in Baltimore 9-7. Detroit beat the A's at home 6-1. Mets handle business against Kansas City 6-2. White Sox are not in trouble, but they lose again to Boston 5-0 yesterday. Chicago now 47-44, one game better than Cleveland, two games better than Minnesota. And the Minnesota Twins have beaten the Guardians in Game 1 and Game 2 thus far. Game 3 of the series is important coming up tonight. Derek Shelton, Twins manager, on the divisional crown at the All-Star break, being within reach. Got to be a pretty sweet feeling.
Yeah, I think with this group, the carrot is they play every day. I mean, you guys are around them every day. And that's not to be, you know, a cliche, but they separate so well. Whether it's coming off the Dodgers where we got swept and we played well and didn't win, they moved on to the next series against Colorado and played. The one thing I really appreciate about this group is they go day to day. And right now, there's a lot of time left, but the fact that we're playing good baseball, I think, is really important.
Minnesota Twins are, in fact, playing great baseball lately. 6-5 winners yesterday. New record is 46-47. Later on last night, we saw Milwaukee lose to St. Louis 5-1, and the Rockies fall to the Dodgers in L.A. by the final of 4-3. Today and tonight, underway here in about an hour, Royals and Mets from Citi Field, 12:10, Cubs at Orioles, Guardians at Twins, a 12:40 go time. Noon is your pregame coverage here. Red Sox and White Sox, 1:10, A's at the Tigers, Brewers at Cardinals, Rockies at Giants. The nightcap tonight from San Francisco gets going at 8:45. In the WNBA last night, kind of a nail biter that shouldn't have been for the Minnesota Lynx. They manage a 6-point win against the worst team record wise in the WNBA. That's the Connecticut Sun. 86-80, the final score. But bigger than that was a record breaking performance for the head coach, Cheryl Reeves. She is now the all time winningest coach in WNBA regular season history.
I think you can't help but have some level of reflection being in Knoxville, walking the halls of the Hall of Fame. I had done it before, admiring, you know, coaches and players and that sort of thing. And so to be there was a bit overwhelming. This is overwhelming. Like, I really, it feels like yesterday that, you know, it was 2010 and we were, you know, trying to be a successful team. I recognize it wasn't just yesterday. And so, you know, we're walking in the Connecticut arena and just reminiscing with Way and Brunson, and, you know, Way in particular when she was here, and you know, there's just it really starts to hit you, you know, when you kind of really start to go through each year. I don't know. I just you never dream that it's going to happen. It's not, you know, I set out to just try to take it day by day and win games. And I just, what I feel is an overwhelming sense of feeling blessed for all the people that let me be me, believed in what we were doing, and found a way to be successful no matter what. I feel incredibly blessed for all the people that have been a part of this journey, small or large.
And that's Lynx head coach Cheryl Reeve, now the all-time wins leader in the regular season of the WNBA. Caitlin Clark made her return to the floor last night. Not too good, though. 9 points on 4 of 12 shooting. Indiana loses to the Sparks on the road, 106-92. Tonight, we'll see the Fever back in action, notably without Caitlin Clark, already scratched out of the lineup. Just didn't want to do the back-to-back nights, fresh off an injury. Caitlin Clark and the Fever visiting the Mercury tonight, 9 o'clock on Prime Video. NBA talk, Nikola Jokic. Should the Nuggets sell high on their generationally talented big?
Are we sure the Denver Nuggets don't get to a point where they say, if he's not going to sign this extension and he's going to keep pushing it back and we are not building the proper roster around him, do we do the unheard of? Do we ever consider striking first? Has at any point the Denver Nuggets organization sat there and said, wait a minute, we're waiting for him. What are we doing here? We haven't built a championship team around him since the championship, obviously. He's amazing. He's an MVP every single year. They don't seem overly willing to go into the tax. I'm just throwing it out there. Is there any chance they may sell high and they may get the single greatest return in the history of this sport in a hypothetical Jokic trade?
Well, where do you go from there if you're Denver, though? Are you going to get rid of Jokic and get better? I don't think so. He's a generationally freakazoid athlete, just as freaky and weird as Victor Wembanyama is right now. I don't view it as possible. Maybe 1% possible. Nikola Jokic and Denver have some sort of rift developed where a trade could make sense. But if it's out there that Jokic wants out, does that not bring his value down on the open market, knowing that he wants out and he's not going to be a Nugget? And the Nuggets are saying, give me this, give me that, give me all of your picks until the end of time. Teams are going to say, yeah, but he wants out of your organization. I'm not so sure that's possible for Denver. Not likely at all, but certainly fun to talk about in the midst of a busy offseason. Lastly, more from Evan Cohen here. Would the Celtics still have made the same maneuvers should they have gotten Giannis Antetokounmpo? Here's the retroactive look at what the Celtics offseason has looked like from Evan Cohen's perspective.
I wonder retroactively, if you would have told Brad Stevens, president of basketball operations for the Celtics, this is what the deal was going to be if you didn't make the Giannis deal. This is what the fallout was going to be. This is what the conversation in and around Boston as well as nationally was going to be. And there wasn't the clear and obvious immediate, let's flip Paul George to Team X so we can get A, B, and C. If he would have gone even further to get Giannis.
There's Evan Cohen on that scenario. It doesn't feel like a great offseason so far for Boston. Definitely didn't make the team better. Getting rid of Jaylen Brown, bringing in Paul George after desperately trying to get Giannis. They still ship Brown out of town. I think the more prudent move would be to just keep Jaylen Brown. I feel like we'd be talking about the Celtics as a better contender if they had just stood on their hands and said, yes, we would have sold Jaylen Brown for Giannis, but we love the guy. He's that valuable to us, and we're going to continue to build around he and Jason Tatum. But again, now we're in a new era of Boston Celtics basketball. Lastly on the scorecard, quick update from Wimbledon, in case you missed it earlier on today. On the women's side, Karolina Mukova beat American Coco Gauff in 3 sets, and it was a tiebreaker in the third that went the way of Mukova, 12-10 in the end. Right now, it's match number 2, semifinals for the women. Kostyuk of Ukraine, Noskova of Czechia. Set 1, tied 2-2, pretty darn early. You can view it on ESPN. Out of the NFL, quickly, Patrick Mahomes. Where does he rank right now in the National Football League? Evan Cohen is a big fan and says, you cannot put Patrick Mahomes outside of the top 2 right now.
If you believe that Patrick Mahomes may be the second greatest quarterback ever, it is definitively disrespectful to drop Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady beyond 2 at any point during their non-rookie part of their career is extremely disrespectful.
I don't understand the take there. I waxed poetic about this in hour 1, and I'm going to dive across the table here in just a second to get Dustin Baker's take here. Josh Allen's the best quarterback in football right now. Patrick Mahomes is not. And then you could have Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson in the conversation. I would probably put Mahomes 2-3 at worst. You can insert another quarterback that you like or love in the conversation if you'd like. If you're a Caleb Williams fan, you could say, Well, you just wait. He's going to be top two by the end of the year. We'll see. But I think it's a little bit odd to say that just because somebody's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, we can't put him outside of the top two, top three. I think Mahomes is in that right now, two or three, up for debate. But just because he's one of the best all time, which he is, much more accomplished than Josh Allen. Josh Allen is way better, miles ahead of Mahomes. Skill, talent, ability right now in terms of production. That could change. We'll see. Where do you stand on Patrick Mahomes, top two, top three? And is it an argument to be made just because he's really darn good historically, does he always deserve to be in the top two or three?
Well, there are different types of lists to consider. Like, I think right now, if you're looking at the momentum, Josh Allen certainly has that. But I don't agree that Allen is leaps and bounds more talented and all that than Mahomes right now. I mean, maybe if Mahomes is still a little gimpy from the injury recovery, the torn ACL. But I think the criteria here is if you have beef with this Josh Allen, number one thing is if you're picking a guy to win you a game-winning drive or picking a guy solo for the fourth quarter, I would still take Mahomes because I've seen him do it like 200 times.
Yep.
And then with Josh Allen, we always have to wonder if something's going to be messed up. So if you're talking that trust factor, I would feel more paranoid of the Vikings facing Patrick Mahomes on a game-winning drive than Josh Allen. Like, both are formidable, but I would take Mahomes there. But in terms of ranking them right now, Mahomes is coming back from a really gruesome injury. And if you want to have Josh Allen on top of your power rankings, great. That makes sense. But just know by October, Mahomes will have something to prove, and he could have 16 touchdowns, two picks by then. Because Mahomes is already up there in the GOAT conversation, does not mandate that 100% of the time he's number one in power rankings, because careers goes through ebbs and flows. But I would still, of all quarterbacks in the NFL, if I could have one for the next 8 years, I would take Mahomes over Josh Allen.
There you go. So Mahomes, Allen debates, probably 1-2. Burrow, Lamar Jackson in that conversation. The other guy, if we're talking one drive, one moment that's on the list that is not on anybody's long-term list, is Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly, right now, Matthew Stafford would be on my short list of one drive, one moment, maybe even one season ahead. Matthew Stafford is still really, really darn good. Quickly, before we get into the NFL deeper and Vikings talk, the NBA is carrying the torch right now with all sorts of craziness. Of course, the Giannis deal goes down. Jaylen Brown deal goes down. Other moves have been made. LeBron James is going to drag this out for a long time, like Aaron Rodgers would slash does. What do you make of the NBA shifting of power, drama? The Celtics feel like they're taking a little bit of a dip here. What do you make of the last couple weeks in the NBA?
It's been seismic, and it has not disappointed if you wanted constant action. I'm a lifelong LeBron fan. In fact, like, when he came in the league is pretty much symbolically when my adulthood started. So I really don't know adulthood without LeBron James. I'm anxious to see where he goes. I think when it's all said and done, it won't be overly complicated. He'll just go back to Cleveland and make it more poetic than we would have expected. On the nature of the trades, I was stunned that, A, the Celtics would trade Jaylen Brown to one of their rivals. It's like the Vikings and Packers doing business. And to the team that just beat them in the postseason. And C, for like a puny haul compared to what we see from other trades. I will always say on this show, and whoever will listen, sports trades are such an inexact science that it's baffling. Like, you can look at the haul for Giannis or Rudy Gobert. And then you see that, and we're like, well, my goodness, Jaylen Brown's got to get something similar. And then you see deals like that in Luka Doncic, where you're like, what were they thinking? They could have price gouged. And, of course, we don't know everything behind the scenes, but I think it's strange that the Celtics couldn't get more for Brown, and I think Brown will work out pretty well in Philadelphia. Overall, I like that the landscape of the league has shifted. I'm glad Giannis stayed in the East. It would have made the West really top-heavy. Miami is suddenly back. It was good for Miami after, like, it feels like 6-7 years of always being in the sweepstakes for huge superstars like Lillard. They never get them. There's always something that gets in the way. Now they're back to their heat ways of getting the big stars. And yes, I will remain on LeBron watch for however long is necessary, and that will be my new favorite team for the next year or two.
So there you go with LeBron. You alluded to Cleveland, you would think was probably the favorite right now, but what would surprise you the most among the teams that have been mentioned? Miami, Denver, Minnesota was in the mentions. Of course, there's other teams out there. What would surprise you the most on LeBron, and what would surprise you the least? I'm sure that that answer is Cleveland is the very much favorite.
Well, Cleveland's the safe thing if you don't want to get cooked in the court of public opinion. Nobody's going to be mad about LeBron finishing it out in Cleveland where he started. The thing that would surprise me the most is probably the Nuggets. Like, they've owned the Lakers, believe me, for the last half decade, and it would just be strange. Like, there's real, like, besides the fact that Jokic is there, there's not really, like, a coach that used to coach LeBron, or he doesn't have a lot of family in Denver. It's just kind of a random good spot to go. I think Minnesota is a long shot, mainly because there's really no good reason for him to want to live in Minnesota for the next 2 years, and he can pick where he wants to play. I don't like Golden State because we've seen this before in sports history where, like, the all-star team from 10 years ago assembles, and usually it has a ceiling of, hey, we got to the playoffs, and now we look really old. It would be fun. Mm-hmm. If he wants to do it for vibes, good for him. He's earned it, but I don't think they're going to be a contender. I think at the end, when the dust settles, the Heat and the Cavs make the most sense for where he would go. If he wants to win a championship, though, probably going to the Timberwolves or even the 76ers. If you can get over the stigma that comes with 76ers in the postseason, roster building wise, I think he could cook in Minnesota and Philadelphia.
So there you go. Latest on LeBron James in regards to those Minnesota Vikings. We'll squeeze in a little news here before we dive into what do the fans want, QB competition, other things. What were the big news items? We'll get to the ancillary pieces after our first break, but a big news item or two right now for the Vikings.
Not much at all, my friend. It was a good time for you to be on a vacation and for us to skip last week. The only thing that really emerged while you were gone was the bizarre Diana Russini's traffic stop video in New Jersey, I believe it was, where she got pulled over. The cop was a Vikings fan. She said, oh, I love the Vikings. Here are my text messages from the head coach. And by the way, the quarterback sucks. And it was a bizarre story that kind of lasted about 72 hours. It made O'Connell, there were theories that if O'Connell had fed her information that McCarthy sucked, like, is he the big puppet master behind Kwesi's firing? It felt a little far-fetched for me. But in general, You had to wonder if any of that Russini madness would leak over into the Vikings, and it did. And then other than that, I would say that, like, the odds for McCarthy versus Murray this training camp, they've shrunk. Sportsbooks once had it at a minus 1,000 money line. Now that's down to minus 770, which is, like, you know, 88% chance. And then there was an interview where Trey McBride, I think he was on Barstool or something like that, where they asked him about Kyler Murray's video game hobby. And McBride had said he'd never even heard of McCarthy or Murray talking about video games. So I think that narrative was probably overblown to begin with.
Going to be pretty darn interesting the rest of the way. I did want to ask you in regards to the Vikings and their plan. We're going to dive into this quarterback competition a little bit deeper. What is your anticipation and desire in the preseason for these quarterbacks to be out there for meaningful moments? Because they've got other guys on the roster, but they need to figure it out. Murray's already clamoring and said, I need to get more reps. I need to play more. I need to figure out this offense. Should these guys play pretty heavily in the preseason?
I usually don't like starters playing in the preseason because I'd rather err on them being a little bit rusty for the first week or two than not having a son of a gun for the entire year if they got hurt. That's what the Vikings embraced when Kevin O'Connell's tenure started in 22, but they're starting to walk it back where you see more starters, you know, if only for a quarter or two. Now, this is a little bit different because this should be an honest-to-goodness quarterback battle. I don't know how soon we'll have a verdict. It will be after the first preseason game. But if you're going to advertise a quarterback battle, which they are, then you have to, I think, wiggle your philosophy around that these guys should both get fair playing time in the first preseason game, which probably equates to a quarter apiece. And then you put Wentz in the third quarter and then Brosmer for the fourth. Otherwise, if it's already decided within a week and a half of training camp, then you could contemplate putting Murray on ice. But I think because Murray has to learn a pretty complicated offense, you want to get him as many reps as possible. So even I would be like, all right, let's get him in there for a quarter of the preseason.
Nobody's asking, but if I were the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, what would Burt do? I would not be playing Carson Wentz at all. I'll be playing the two guys competing, and then I'll be playing Max Brosmer or any other camp arms on the roster as much as possible on the back end. We know who and what and why Carson Wentz is. We'll see about the starting 1A, 1B in Minnesota. A lot up for debate here the rest of the way. It's hour number two, Minnesota Vikings Thursday. We clear the air at noon for the Minnesota Twins, looking for the sweeperoo of the Cleveland Guardians. Pregame coverage at noon. Our Viking-centered hour number two of overtime continues after this.
Don't miss a moment of local college and pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you. It's Minnesota Vikings Thursday, July 9th edition of Overtime. We were on the air early at 10, which means we're off the air early at noon. 34 minutes and 5 seconds left in the show here before we clear way for the Minnesota Twins pregame looking for a sweep of the Cleveland Guardians. We got Dustin Baker in studio. What's better than that? Well, the answer is Stone Baker in studio. Frankly, we got Stone also over here. And Stone, I'm going to start out with a question. We're going to get to some NFL trivia and hopefully, Dustin, we pull our weight today. I hope. Stone, though, in regards to going international, you've been to a lot of different places, Ireland, Norway, now Italy. I think I might be missing one, possibly. What kind of say do you get in where the family goes next? Do you get polled about, would you like to go here, 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 Antarctica, Canada, or Congo, random countries out there? Or in addition to that, where would you like to go? If it was up to you and the family had to do your bidding, where would you like to go on the next family international vacation?
I would like to go to Paris, France.
All right. So Paris, France. That would be on the short list of a lot of people. I know that that's on the short list of my mom to go back to Paris.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. I put together the list of cool places to go when he was like a toddler. So he hasn't had much say, mm-hmm. but he has bought in with his knowledge of the places where we go, and he's enjoyed himself along the way.
So is that a little bit of a hint there? Is France on the short list moving forward? Have you guys knocked it down and made your plans yet?
No, but we have, like, my daughter is 15, and we kind of envisioned that we would take her there to France, like, when she was almost like an adult, so 18. So I would guess if we were going to do Paris, it'll probably be 3 summers from now.
All right. So certainly next on the docket, or not too far away on the international docket for the Baker fam. Stone has been playing this NFL guessing game with us. It's a mixed bag so far. We're going to go 5 to 7 players, depending upon our speed here. And Stone, I'm going to give you some theme music today. So here we go. Underneath, give us the first name. We got to tell you what player this what team this player plays for. Give us that first name, Stone.
Arvel Reese.
So that would be the New York Giants, yeah. Correct? All right.
He's brand new. Stone.
Ding, ding, ding. How about that, Stone? 1 for 1. Give us the second one.
He's a stud.
Roger McCreary.
He is a cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, he's on the breakout stars list.
I think I know it.
Yes, I know it, too.
The Rams?
He played for the Rams. He plays on the Detroit Lions now.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So there we go. 2 for 2. We're a collective team. We're in this together. Let's go to number 3.
Charles Cross.
I believe...
He's an offensive lineman.
Offensive lineman. He was with Seattle. I think that's going to be my guess. Charles Cross.
Seattle.
Wow. 3 for 3. Let's keep it going, Stone. Number 4.
T.J. Hall.
T.J. like Thomas Jeffrey or P.J. like Patrick Jeffrey?
It just says T.J. Hall.
So T like Thomas?
Sounds like a fullback, but I don't know where he plays.
Stone, T like Thomas?
I'll give you a hint. He's a quarterback.
P.J. Hall.
T.J.
T.J. Hall. I'm going to go Cardinals.
New Orleans.
He must be on the practice.
All right, so 3 for 4. Give us number 5 here, Stone.
Demetrius Crownover.
I feel like he was a recent draft pick. The last name is Crown.
O-V-E-R.
Huh. I've no guess. I'm going to say Indianapolis Colts.
Do you have a draft?
I don't have a guess.
New England Patriots?
Yes.
Okay, let's go for number 6. We got 2 more, Stone. Fire away.
This is actually the number 7.
All right, what is it?
Ben Sauls.
Sauls, not Sims.
S-A-U-L-S.
S-A-U-L-S.
No idea. We started so darn hot.
I'll say Titans.
I will say Steelers.
New York Giants.
Right. Well, let's forget.
One more.
Last one. We got to end on a winner. Give me somebody.
The music's too good.
It is too good.
All right.
We were 3 for 3, Stone. Give me this last one.
All right. Liam Fournell.
Spell the last name for me.
F-U-R-O-R-N-A-D-E-L.
I don't know.
No idea. These are very tough. Now, I'm going to say Carolina Panthers.
Jaguars.
No, New York Jets.
All right. Well, not our best. We started out really, really hot there, Dustin. 3 for 3, and then it all came unglued. Demetrius Crownover, I had heard of. I did not know exactly where he landed. The other names, though, an absolute mystery to meet. Well done, Stone Baker, and certainly Paris France on the list for the Baker fam moving forward. Minnesota Vikings latest news. We touched on the Diana Rossini situation. Anything else this week that we may have missed?
No, I think the only thing that comes to mind is Ed Ingram was doing an interview with Houston Texans media, and he said that going to the Texans was the very best thing that ever happened to him, which certainly wasn't a shot at the Vikings, but it's an obvious fact that the Vikings either didn't coach him well enough, shouldn't have traded him yet, or everything was just a huge coincidence because he balled out in Houston and he was just mid in Minnesota.
You know, sometimes that just happens, though.
It's weird.
I was having a discussion with a coworker about Rasul Douglas yesterday. He's a Miami Dolphins fan. Douglas was okay there. Rasul Douglas was a journeyman. I believe he had three or four teams before he was on the Packers. And then Packers find him and they're like, this guy's awesome. What are we talking about? He was our starting cornerback, TB2 for a few years. Really darn good. Traded him to Buffalo. Was pretty decent there. Miami. And then he's just kind of this guy every year that gets opportunities. Now he's with the Washington Commanders. So sometimes it plain and simply just doesn't work out as currently constructed. And a change of scenery helps quite a bit. And sometimes that is the case. Other times, you know, player's not good here, player's not good there. It's simple as that.
Happened with Duke Shelley in Minnesota, too.
So certainly we'll see. There's guys just certainly fit certain organizations, like a Randall Cobb or a Tremont Williams from a Packer perspective. What do fans want? This is an interesting debate here. You can tell me about the poll we were talking about earlier. But in regards to the quarterback position, I think the obvious answer is, I don't care who starts at quarterback. I want my team to win and be really good. But there's also some opinion in there in regards to, okay, this year I want this player, that player. I want this guy to stick around in the case of J.J. McCarthy or Kyler Murray. What do fans really want? What is the opinion fetching you've done in regards to Kyler Murray or J.J. McCarthy? Or if you're Ben Lieber, Carson Wentz.
So let's start this by saying that there's optionality this year and last year. There really was not. There was J.J. McCarthy and Sam Howell all summer until they realized that Howell wasn't good. They traded him to the Eagles. Got Charles Dimmings in the end via the draft pick for it. But it was the job was handed to McCarthy on a silver platter last year. And if he had been better than he was, nobody would care. Be like, oh, great, we got our guy. But he struggled and he got hurt. And, you know, he was great at times and he was miserable at times. So this year, the Vikings had to respond by not doing the same thing over. Don't crown McCarthy until he has a competition. There was no better option at the price of $1.3 million to get Kyler Murray. So how I view this now from my perspective and how most fans perceive this is Kyler Murray has a chance to be the Baker Mayfield here, where the Buccaneers signed Mayfield in 2023 to a prove-it contract, and he's still their quarterback and probably will be for the foreseeable future. We also had Sam Darnold do this, but we let him go. So I would say you're right at the very top of the segment when you said we really don't care who it is between McCarthy and Murray, but if that guy's good, that's all that we want. If you remember, the Vikings finished 9-8 last year, and they had the fifth worst or fifth least efficient quarterback play per EPA per play dropback. If you could finish 9-8 with really crappy quarterback play, imagine what you can do with average or, you know, ideal, like the upside Murray would bring to the table. On the whole, I think Vikings fans want Murray to succeed, but there will be a quick hook if he either looks like an idiot or he gets hurt, because you'll have McCarthy, who should be hungry, hungrier than ever, with these allegedly improved mechanics. The story always ends the best if McCarthy gets his job back and we just resume this thing and it turned out that 2025 was a developmental year. But I'll come back to say that the thing that worries me about him is the injuries. I don't know if the guy is just fragile, if it was just a weird string of coincidences last year. Vikings just want a stable quarterback. I had a feeling that when they offloaded Cousins after 2023, we would have quarterback injuries because he was so damn healthy for those six seasons. And here we are. We just want the guy to be good. It really doesn't matter if it's Murray or McCarthy.
So let's talk of quarterback a little bit deeper here. Without, of course, forecasting injuries, that's never fun to do. What's the nightmare scenario in a positive light? So this time next year, this time leading into the draft would be, what's the nightmare scenario that is kind of successful this year? Is it McCarthy loses the job to Murray? Murray looks good. McCarthy looks great in the preseason and mop-up duty. And then you have a crazy another decision of an offseason. What is that nightmare scenario based on stress next year around these two quarterbacks in particular?
Well, I think you want it to be all or nothing, because you don't want to miss out on the 2027 quarterback draft class. With that said, it's unlikely that Murray and McCarthy would be terrible. They just flat out, neither of them is any good. That's unlikely. I think the worst case scenario would be that either one or both are just good enough. Like, hey, Kyler Murray, like if we have to debate whether or not Kyler Murray was good in January, hey, he had 22 touchdowns and 12 picks and 3 rushing touchdowns. The Vikings finished 10-7, got their butts beat in round 1 of the postseason. You'd have this awkward decision like, all right, will he get better at age 30? He's going to want $50 million. I think the worst case scenario is you don't get a definitive answer by the end of the regular season on which guy you want to attach everything, you know, to. I still hold out hope that McCarthy will get his chance in a regular season game this year. And I'm not kidding. Like, if he plays well in that opportunity, there's no reason whatsoever you have to give the job back to Murray. It's probably going to end up where they're both really good. That's how Vikings football tends to go when you're sizing something up like this. Otherwise, if there has to be a clean break, this is the perfect time for it, because next year the quarterback first round like class is already like 5-6 guys deep, mm-hmm. and you have a new general manager already in the saddle who can observe everything for a full year before making his decision.
And Brendan Sorsby also in that conversation for 2027 now. So that's the quarterback scenario situation for the Minnesota Vikings. I did find this article this morning. This is a fantasy football based article, but bounce back seasons. Two different Vikings on the list. Kyler Murray, one for a bounce back season. Fantasy wise, that just means production, frankly. Mm-hmm. And then the other Viking on the list, which I find interesting, we have a differing opinion. I think that TJ Hockenson is kind of trending towards the out of gas. And you were talking last week or a couple weeks ago about you think he might have a little bit of an ability to have a resurgent campaign. What do you think of those two landing on the list? And is there another Viking that comes to mind? I guess technically Justin Jefferson could have a bounce back season with better quarterback play. What do you think there?
Okay, so for Kyler Murray, I want to reiterate, I feel like I say this once every couple weeks, it's not a mystery to me who's going to win this quarterback battle. Mm-hmm. So when I see articles, fantasy articles, they're like, hey, Kyler Murray's a sleeper at quarterback. I'm like, well, duh. Mm-hmm. Like, if you play fantasy football, when Murray's playing, he's good. He's a top 10 fantasy football quarterback because he uses his legs. He averages 600 rushing yards every 17 starts. So, yes, of course, Kyler Murray, if he's the ordained starter, he starts 15 to 17 games. He's going to end up as the QB, you know, 12 or, you know, between QB1 and QB12 based on fantasy production. It's not that I think TJ Hockenson is going to return back to his prime form of 2022. Mm-hmm. It's that he was forced to be the sixth offensive lineman last year because of injuries. And if they kept him around on a pay cut, they have a plan for him. We're just talking about Kyler Murray. Like, he helped transform Trey McBride into one of, if not the best, tight end in the league. So if we have this quarterback who's probably going to start week 1 that has a verifiable track record of feeding a tight end, he's probably going to get more targets, TJ Hockenson, that is, than he has gotten the last 2 years. I don't think Hockenson will ever get back to how good he was, you know, the second half of the 2022 season. But his problem as of late is that the offense has deprioritized him. And a lot of that has to do with suspect quarterback play. So I would say that any other sleepers on the Vikings roster, I mean, Juwan Jennings is a good play if you need somebody probably for your bye weeks. And then if you play dynasty fantasy football, there's always a chance that Demona Claiborne mm-hmm. turns into the guy. Because if you, let's face it, Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason are the Vikings running backs right now. Those guys may not be on the roster when you and I are doing the show 1 year from now. Mm-hmm. That would nominate somebody like Claiborne or a rookie to be named later as the Vikings RB1.
And certainly a lot still up for debate in the Minnesota Vikings offseason. Just about the time to fire up the debate cannon surrounding training camp, camp battles, etc. We'll talk about 5 Vikings that are primed to make a leap. We can talk about leaping from UDFA to a roster spot to a starter, starter to an all-pro. We'll define the leaps and the players that are primed to make them for the Minnesota Vikings in training camp and beyond coming up next as we say so long to Minnesota Vikings Thursday after this on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
It's so convenient. Sports on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Ooh.
Right back with you, putting the bow on Minnesota Vikings Thursday here on Overtime. Tomorrow on the show, we are back to 11-1. Hope you can join us. High Noon Showdown, Friday Parlay, and more. Back and better than ever with a Friday edition of the show. Let's put a bow on this one, though, Dustin. Let's talk about five Vikings primed to make a leap. And I'll let you define this. I don't know exactly where you're going or what players we're talking about, but we can talk about UDFAs making the roster. That's a leap. We could talk about the guys that were on the roster last year, certifying themselves to be a starter, starters going on to Pro Bowl, All Pro, or if you're so brave, you can talk about a leap for Justin Jefferson into the best receiver of all time. Oh my goodness, I can't believe he did that. Give me your five Vikings primed to make a leap this season.
Okay, so the way I interpreted this was based on what they did last year, they can make a leap on the depth chart or make a dent in their, you know, improve their reputation in 2026. So I didn't include any UDFAs. If we were going to do that, we'd have Dylan Bell, who seems like he has an outside chance, inside track.
Is
really.
He, really quickly, is Dylan Bell your number one UDFA most likely to make the roster heading into camp?
I would say probably my guy, Brett Thorson, because he was the best kicker in college football. And for some reason, because Johnny Hecker's on the roster, we're going to have this battle. Hecker shouldn't even be on the Vikings, I don't think. It should just be Brett Thorson as your punter. Maybe it's because he didn't hold kicks in college that there's this mystery. So, yeah, I would say between Dylan Bell and Brett Thorson, those are the guys that I expect to be on the roster, at least from a July standpoint. All right, so at the very bottom of my list, working my way up to number one, would be Ty Felton. He was having a great offseason until the Vikings signed Juwan Jennings. I think there is a path for Felton to mature into a WR3 role. Like, let's face it, Juwan Jennings will probably only be around for a year, and then he'll ask for a new big contract elsewhere. So I think we'll see seedlings of what Ty Felton can do. If you're under the impression that Kyler Murray will distribute the ball effectively like I am, then there's guys that are going to need targets, and one of these receivers will probably get hurt with something, so we'll see a little bit more of Ty Felton. At number four, I have Blake Brandel, because he is a career-long, versatile offensive lineman. He's played every spot for the Vikings. He's one of the longest-tenured Vikings now. He was drafted in 2020, and they've decided that he's going to be their center. So the reason I have him on this list is when the regular season winds down, he could be a guy that has, a 68 PFF, and he's just your center for the next couple of years. I think he has the path. He has the coach's endorsement to be a, top 20 NFL center, which would be good enough on this offensive line. Number three. Because Harrison Smith is in limbo, one safety is going to have to emerge, and I think that could be Jay Ward, who unceremoniously took Theo Jackson's job late last season in December, and nobody really noticed or cared. But Ward is scrappy. He's also in a contract year. I think he could get the snaps if Harrison Smith doesn't return. You'd be looking at a safety unit of Josh Metellus and Jay Ward. I think he can get better. Number two is Donovan Jackson, who was solid as a rookie left guard. He played through a broken wrist, and I think he missed three games. This isn't very bold because, he was a first-rounder last year. But if we want to talk about guys who could be a Pro Bowler, who could be an established, all right, yeah, this guy is our guy for the next 10 years, that could be Donovan Jackson by the time the season's over. And the number one is very obviously Dallas Turner. The seas have parted for Dallas Turner. Now, he ended up playing 770 snaps last year, which is a huge workload. But because Jonathan Greenard and Andrew Van Ginkel have been on this depth chart for the last 2 years, it was always Dallas Turner was the other guy. When's he going to play? When will it see if it's worth the huge trade with the Jaguars to get him? Now all of those discussions are over. Jonathan Greenard plays for the Eagles. The main edge rushers for the Vikings are Van Ginkel and Dallas Turner. And if you watch Turner's tape, or even, just watched him live with your eye test, he has the speed there. He forces fumbles. He had, 8.5 sacks last year. This can be the year where you understand, all right, this is why they spent the farm to get him. I hope that Turner, does big things. And he's one of my favorite Vikings. I like the way he carries himself. And I can't get over how fast he is off the edge.
And certainly that's a really nice list. Again, Dallas Turner, the one that I wanted to rewind to is the interesting one of Ty Felton. I think it was number five for you. We talked a lot about the mystery of Ty Felton. Why isn't he on the field? They went out and got Thielen instead of giving an opportunity. And then he's not on the field at all. This offseason, they get Juwan Jennings instead of getting an opportunity. Could it be possible in a world where Jordan Addison's got 2 years left on his deal after doing this fifth-year option this offseason, Ty Felton kind of needs to take that leap? Otherwise, the Vikings are going to have to draft a running mate for Justin Jefferson long-term. If Jordan Addison doesn't work out, that could be Juwan Jennings, but Jennings feels old enough to where that might not be his role. So this is a
massive put up or shut up season for Ty Felton. It feels like the time is now even to get into a role where you catch 25 balls for 250 yards this year.
Yeah, and when Felton was selected in round three of that draft, everybody, Vikings fans, were like, what? Like, this guy, he was supposed to go in round five, but we also didn't need a wide receiver. So the only thing that made sense was that they were planning a tentative off-ramp for Jordan Addison or hedging the bet for his nefarious behaviors. Now, then you get to the season and Felton's a rookie and he hardly plays, like hardly plays at all. And like, in fact, when he's on the field, you message your friends and say, oh my God, Ty Felton's playing. You shouldn't have to do that for a third round rookie. So the way that the draft went down, yes, outwardly it looked like, okay, Felton could be a succession plan if they don't want Addison back or if Addison ends up in prison because he's been, you know, known to do some really weird stuff. But then after his rookie season where Felton felt like a complete footnote, and now they signed Juwan Jennings, the latest chapter to keep Felton off the field. The only reason I include Felton is that there is a chance that Jefferson, Addison, or Jennings, you know, misses however many games, and then Felton moves into the WR3 role, and you see, like, okay, he can catch the ball. He can run routes. He's already got the speed part down.
So certainly there's a lot of big guys that could break out, make a leap this year. A guy that certainly made a leap last year along that defensive line was Jalen Redmond. He's the guy that jumped out last year. So we'll see about who could make a leap. ESPN had James Pierre, the cornerback edition by way of the Pittsburgh Steelers, as the breakout guy for Minnesota. I didn't love the Packers either. It was Anthony Belton, the guard. Not a sexy position to make a breakout leap, but I would welcome that. I think Packers' answer should have been Matthew Golden to make a leap. James Pierre. It just feels like the latest veteran injected into CB3, CB4, CB5 land in Minnesota. Do you give that any credence at all?
I love it because it makes my James Pierre takes from the last 3 or 4 months look great. Mm-hmm. If you look at his tape, and then you look at his PFF, 86.8 last year, 377 defensive snaps plays. He looks like he can ball. But then I have to bring myself back to this stratosphere and say, like, wouldn't Mike Tomlin have figured that out since 2020? Like, he's been on that same team since 2020. If he was this diamond in the rough, I'm pretty sure Mike Tomlin would have figured that out. So I'm right there with you that he can be a breakout player in that if the Vikings end up needing a CB2, he can fill that job. But the guy is going to be 30. And I mean, like, you know, Dalvin Cook is 30. Like, it's like projecting Dalvin Cook as a breakout player and he's retired. I don't know that I've ever seen a sports list where the breakout candidate is going to be 30. I don't think that was ignored by, was that Ben Solak or Seth Walder, whoever came up with that. I will say this, though. If you want to do it based on PFF grades, James Pierre should probably start this season over Isaiah Rodgers. But as we know, PFF grades are not gospel. Yes, I will accept fully that James Pierre can break out and become the Vikings' main cornerback for the next 3-4 years. It's just probably not going to happen like that. He's a really good CB3.
And again, I told you somebody that I was crushing on in the pre-draft that I think is a good fit for Minnesota to have a big role. Charles Demings, the rookie Stephen F. Austin grad, moving into that cornerback room as well. Lastly here, as we're heading into training camp preseason, every year you're excited to see these guys in jerseys out there running around. If you had to choose one guy, the answer might be obvious. Could be Caleb Banks, Dom Orange. Maybe it's Jake Golday at linebacker. Who's your number one rookie you're most looking forward to seeing on the field and say, I got to watch this kid. Can't wait to get him going. I need to see what he's about.
I love this draft class, and I think we're going to look back on it and call it the Brzezinski draft class that turned out to be this gem. And we're like, hey, why did we get rid of Rob Brzezinski in the first place? Or why did he get demoted back to his job? So it's hard for me to pick one. I will say that the intrigue on Caleb Banks for me is through the roof because this was a team that has drafted poorly for the last 4 years. I thought they for sure had to play it safe and get a guy who was easy to scout, like Dylan Thienemann, like Thienemann, however you say his name. But they went like the most risky pick that anybody in round one took because it's a 330-pound dude with two bad foot injuries in the last, you know, year. So I'm intrigued to figure out, is the upside really that sexy? Can we trust Brian Flores enough that he's going to nail this draft pick? And then we have this Chris Jones-like monster for the next 10 years. The other one, for my selfish purposes to understand how the offense is going to work, is Demond Claiborne. Because when you put on that tape, you see a guy who has the speed like Devon Achane, but then the stature reminds you of Jerick McKinnon or Nyheim Hines. And so he doesn't have that workhorse build. But then you also have to remember the Vikings just brought over Devon Achane's offensive coordinator to be their assistant head coach. So what I'm most curious about from this draft class is whether or not Demond Claiborne is just a career-long RB3, or if he's a guy that can be groomed to be the RB1 of the future.
Certainly a lot on the table for those Minnesota Vikings. We will continue with our Minnesota Vikings training camp battle chat next week with Dustin Baker. Be on the alert for Vikings Thursday next week. We'll talk about what battles for position, starting, or reserve roles will move the needle. As always, Vikings Thursday, a blast here on the show. Thanks so much, as always. We'll talk to you in a week.
We will be back.
All right, that's Dustin Baker. Find him at VikingsTerritory.com, Vikes Now, the YouTube show, DraftHuddle.com as well. And we will say so long with this. We're heading into Minnesota Twins pregame coverage in just a moment. Hope you can be with us tomorrow when overtime rolls back around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.